I have a dream that all men are created equal.
Together, let's move Australia forward.
You're listening to Never Talk Politics.
Hey guys, I'm Steph McDonald.
And I'm Nick Appleby.
And welcome to another episode of Never Talk Politics, the show that brings you important issues with real people who shape your community. So what are we taking a look at this week?
This week we're going to be having a look at waste. Australians are some of the highest producers of waste in the world, and although the rate of recycling has increased dramatically, we are now more than ever a throwaway society. I'll be taking a look at what works and what doesn't when it comes to waste disposal, and why the government isn't playing a bigger part.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering what we can do to not be wasteful with our world's natural resources, and how we can be more appreciative or mindful of them in our everyday lives by thinking green and ecologically.
So who are you going to chat to today to try and answer some of our questions, Steph?
I'm going to chat with Sister Patricia and Sister Anne-Marie from the Rahamim Ecological Learning Community in Bathurst.
And I'll be talking to Professor of Hazardous Waste at Deakin University, Trevor Thornton. And then I'll have a chat with some spokespeople from Greenpeace and the National Toxics Network about the Orica toxic chemical scandal. But before all that, let's take our weekly trip around the world.
Welcome to Around the World. I'm Stephanie McDonald. Kicking it off in Pretoria, South Africa, where the 17th World Festival of the Youth is currently being held. The World Festival of Youth and Students is organised every 4 years in different countries by the World Federation of Democratic Youth, an international non-governmental organisation of the United Nations. This year's festival's motto is "Let's Defeat Imperialism for a World Peace, Solidarity and Social Transformation." Aung San Suu Kyi, famous resistant of the Burmese democratic movement, says that the motto is important in reinforcing that there should not be a gap between the generations of young and old people.
Peace, solidarity and social transformation all are aspects of a changing world. We want to change our world. The young people want to change their world. And yet their world and ours is one and the same. This is why we would like to have a closer relationship with the young. There should not be a generation gap when we are working for such universal values as peace.
The event has been especially dedicated to the likes of Fidel Castro and Nelson Mandela. Organisers of the event are expecting over 15,000 participants, which concludes in late December. More than 500 delegates from different countries all over the world have registered as delegates to the festival, as well as some thousands from South Africa. And finally, back home, where a recent study has revealed that young people living in Australia but were born in New Zealand are least likely to feel good about living in Australia. The survey revealed that only 18.5% of those born in New Zealand say that they feel good about living in Australia. Only 5.6% of participants say that they rarely or never feel good about living in Australia. However, the survey of young people aged between 14 and 17 years living in western and southwestern suburbs in Sydney found that the majority of them felt good about Australia and the suburbs that they live in. Teenagers born in England, Lebanon, Vietnam, Bangladesh and parts of Africa were most likely to feel positive about Australia, with 100% saying that they felt good about living here. The survey, undertaken for the Department of Immigration and Citizenship, also found that young people from minority backgrounds were unsure about their identities as Australians. The authors of the study said that the results showed the stereotypical view of Western Sydney as a place of trouble for young people did not hold true for many. And that's what's happening around the world. I'm Stephanie McDonald.
Like the Australian cricket team, climate change is a problem with countless contributing factors. Waste, and what to do with all of it, is one of these factors and one of the biggest environmental problems facing the world today. I had a chat with lecturer in hazardous materials management at Deakin University, Dr. Trevor Thornton. So what are the main problems facing the world in dealing with waste today?
Well, I guess the quantities that are being generated seems to be increasing rather than decreasing. as well as the types. We're getting a lot more sort of hazardous materials being generated, which require, you know, more sophisticated treatment or containment.
You mentioned just now that new types of wastes are being produced. Are technologies in the waste management industry keeping up with these new types of wastes?
Yeah, it's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario. The technology exists to basically treat all different types of wastes, but a waste treatment company or contractor, rightfully so, will only commit resources if there's some certainty that they're going to get a return. And if the government policies aren't such that guarantees it, then they're sort of questioning whether they should be providing those technologies. In the main, governments don't provide the systems or the treatment or disposal facilities, so it's up to the private sector.
Now, when I was younger, back in primary school, we used to watch a lot of documentaries which showed, you know, the horrors of landfill. But now the focus seems to be a lot more on pollution and chemicals, especially with the debate around climate change. Is landfill still a big issue?
Landfill is a big issue, and I agree with you that in the olden days, they were very poorly operated. They had no real controls over them, located in very poor areas. The landfills today are very sophisticated, multi-million-dollar operations. They really are good processes. Having said all that, you want to try and reduce as much as you can going to them. So, for example, in a landfill, things will break down and release greenhouse gases. And there's a lot of strategies happening at the moment to capture those greenhouse gases, particularly methane, and convert it to energy.
I just want to talk about the nuclear power debate in Australia for a second. Recently, there was a reignition of the debate. And one of the issues that always seems to come up in this argument is waste. Now, some experts say that the waste is indisposable and dangerous to the environment, while others still argue that the amount of nuclear waste produced is so insignificant that its disposal really doesn't matter. What's your opinion on this issue?
My opinion is sort of in that latter camp, that the amount that's being generated is relatively small. I won't say insignificant because, you know, radioactive waste is radioactive waste, but the management strategies for it, it's like all waste things, have improved dramatically over the years. So it's not like a case of just throwing it in a plastic bag and dumping it in a tip. It's got to be encased. It's got to be disposed of or stored in a facility where the you know, there's no danger of emissions and all those sorts of things. What it tends to be is the old NIMBY syndrome, you know, not in my backyard. People want cleaner power, but they don't want to deal with the consequences. So I think it's an option. I think that we obviously do need to have a debate over it, present the facts and figures. The power stations that operate on nuclear fuel have improved in terms of safety and efficiency over the years. So I think we just need to have an open debate about it and not simply close our minds to something that may actually provide us with a good solution. Because the other option is to continue with coal and oil, which have alternative environmental impacts. And so we've got to work out which is the best at the end of the day.
Do you see an end to the problems of waste management sometime in the future? And if so, how would this arise?
No, I don't. I think waste management is something that's going to continue for a long, long time. One of the problems is that if we look at, in a sense, from a domestic level, we get messages from governments and other agencies to simply recycle more. Now, the problem is recycling is an option which is further down the waste management hierarchy. We should be giving messages about reducing and avoiding waste in the first instance. You know, We've grown to a more takeaway type single-use society. You go to the supermarkets or to the hardware stores and things are packaged much more sophisticatedly using plastics and all those sorts of things. We've really got to sort of take a good hard look at ourselves in terms of what we're doing in terms of our purchasing decisions and change our approaches to that. As a result, we will always need landfills, we always need some form of treatment facilities, and we as consumers have got to accept that. I think we're doing a hell of a lot better than we have been.
Why was the decision to ban plastic bags a bad idea, in your opinion?
Every household virtually in Australia has a little bin under the sink which is designed for a small shopping bag type plastic bag. So what people are doing now is they're not getting the plastic shopping bags from the supermarket, so they're purchasing little bags for these bins. These bags have more plastic in them. They're often coloured and perhaps even perfumed, so they've got hazardous chemicals in them and on them. And so we actually haven't reduced the total environmental impact. We've probably increased the environmental impact, but we have reduced shopping bags. So I don't know whether it was a good decision.
You're listening to Never Talk Politics on the Community Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Steph McDonald. Now this week on Never Talk Politics, we're taking a look at not being wasteful. So I've decided to come and visit Sister Patricia and Sister Anne-Marie from the Rahamim Ecological Learning Community in Bathurst. It's not far from Mount Panorama and it's a really big property. There's lots of trees and flowers and even chooks and some birds amongst that as well. So I'm just on my way to meet them and have a quick chat about Rahamim. Okay, so I'm sitting here with Sister Patricia and Sister Anne-Marie on this bright sunny morning at Rahamim Ecological Learning Community in Bathurst. How are you both today?
I'm very well, thank you, Steph.
Yes, very well, thank you, Stephanie.
That's good. So can you tell me a little bit about Rahamim, Patricia?
Rahamim Ecological Learning Community is a community of people who are trying to learn more about the natural environment, to learn more about planet Earth and our place in the universe, and we're trying to change our thinking and our behaviour about the way we relate with the planet and the way we relate with the natural environment based on this new knowledge.
So what was the reason or the motivation for the establishment of Rahamim? Any of you can...
Well, I'll start. Rahamim was founded because, like the rest of the human race, the Sisters of Mercy realised that we have a lot to learn about how to relate with the environment in a way that is not so destructive as it's become in the last 100 or so years. And so we set about dedicating the property that we own here in Bathurst, St. Joseph's Mount, to this work, to seeing how human beings can live differently and relate differently to our environment. And then, of course, we had the issue of climate change hit the scene, and that's made the work even more urgent.
So do you have anything else to add, Anne-Marie?
Yes, Steph, I think that one of the important components or the overall umbrella of our work here is to live more sustainably. So living sustainably on this planet that has been gifted to us, really, is an important way forward in the future.
So you mentioned, you know, it's important to live sustainably. So what sort of things does the Rahamim community do to try and not be wasteful? You know, because I've noticed that you have solar panels and wind-powered pumps, a community gardens project and even some chooks.
The solar panels and solar hot water are part of a government, New South Wales government grant that we received last year to demonstrate how to cut down on electricity and improve our usage of electricity by using the solar energy of the sun. And we've done other things about not being wasteful by putting in insulation in the... this is a heritage house. And so it was built in a time that wasn't thinking ecologically, wasn't thinking environmentally. The solar panels obviously generate electricity and we sell that back to the grid. And that improves the electricity usage across the area.
We're also very conscious of recycling, so we try to recycle as much as we can. The Chook House, or as it's affectionately called, the Chook Chapel, it was built out of recycled materials, and the redesigning of the community gardens along permaculture principles, that was done with mostly recycled materials. Recycling is a very strong feature of permaculture. We're also looking at harvesting and conserving water on the property, and to that end we're putting in more tanks. We discovered that we already had a big underground tank on the property that hadn't been used for 50 years, And so we've reactivated that. That's 110,000 cubic litres of water. And we live on a granite hill, so it is important to slow down the movement of water on this hill. Not that we want to keep it all here in this place. We're very conscious of our place in the Macquarie catchment area, and we want the water eventually to get down to the Vale Creek and into the river. But we'd just like to slow it down as it moves down this property so that it's not causing erosion.
So a bigger question for you both. Why do you believe it's important for people to be mindful of and more appreciative of the natural resources available to us?
The other thing I do here is I tell the story, the new story of the universe that's coming out of Western science. And that story has brought home to me how precious this planet is in the universe. It's this beautiful blue-green orb hanging in the blackness of space, and our technology hasn't found any other planet like it in our solar system or in any other solar system that we've had access to through our telescopes, etc. Now, if this is a very unique planet in the universe that can sustain life, it seems to me that it wasn't such an issue, but now that we know, then I think it's incumbent on all human beings to be very careful about keeping our air fresh, our water clean, our forests healthy, and our soils healthy, because this planet is a living planet, and it's produced and sustains life. And so we need now to contribute to its resilience, even if there'd never been anything about climate change. Knowing what we know about our planet and its place in the universe now, it puts a big responsibility on us thinking creatures to take care of the rest of the creatures and to keep the planet a place where life can survive.
So, Anne-Marie, where should people go to if they would like to find out more about Rahamim?
Well, Steph, Google is a very easy way to find us. You can just Google Rahamim. And Rahamim has an M on the end. R-A-H-A-M-I-M. You'll find us, the top three references are us. So it's Rahamim Ecological Learning Community. But we also have a Facebook page. And again, you need to put in the full title there, Rahamim Ecological Learning Community, in the search menu, and you'll find Rahamim.
In the past, production of goods in Australia came at the cost of environmental sustainability. During the 1960s, a solvent manufacturing company called Orica inadvertently produced a dangerous byproduct chemical called HCB, or hexachlorobenzene. Recently, the Australian government signed a permit allowing Orica to transport 6,100 tonnes of Australian HCB to Denmark for incineration, a decision which has caused outrage at home and abroad. I spoke to Greenpeace scientist Adam Walters about the risks of HCB.
The chemical is actually considered to be a very toxic substance. It was one of 12 pollutants which were originally listed in the Stockholm Convention as chemicals that we should eradicate from the globe, essentially. Now, that is because the chemical persists for a long time in the environment, can bioaccumulate. So if it's taken up by an animal, it stays in there, and if they are exposed to more, the amount in their body just accumulates. And it's very toxic. It's carcinogenic, causes cancer. It's teratogenic, so it can cause deformities in fetuses, and it's also responsible for a range of other harmful effects.
The chemicals will be transported to Denmark by boat, a move which lobbyist group the National Toxics Network believes could be potentially disastrous. NTN spokesperson Dr. Marion Lloyd-Smith.
We basically said that, okay, the likelihood of an accident may be small, but if an accident occurred, it would be the impact of that accident would be massive. But then, of course, when we found out that the ship itself had failed 3 years of safety inspections, that made our concern even greater.
Orica has received the blessing of the Danish Environmental Protection Authority, or the EPA. Wouldn't they have the best interests of the Danish environment in mind?
The Danish EPA is a government body, So they're responsible for giving permits under the Basel Convention, setting conditions. And for 18 months, they basically said, no, we do not want this waste. Now, we believe, from what we're hearing from Denmark, there was political pressure put onto the Danish Environment Minister. She finally informed the EPA that she wanted a permit given. They allowed a permit to go ahead. But since that has happened, there has been such political turmoil in Denmark that that permit now has been put into an abeyance. And so the export to Denmark is now indefinitely postponed while the minister and the government in Denmark review the whole situation. We are hoping that this will be the end of this folly and that finally the Australian government and the company Orica, who owns this waste, face up to their responsibilities and deal with it here. So we would suggest that there wasn't so much protection of the Danish environment about, you know, giving this permit, but really it was pressure by a number of people in the Danish government and by the owners of the incinerator who wanted the hefty $80 million they would be paid to take this waste and to burn this waste.
In an interview with the ABC Radio in November, you said that Australia does have the capacity to dispose of these chemicals.
That's
but if this is true, why would the company shipping the chemicals go to such lengths to dispose of them in Denmark? Wouldn't that cost them a lot of money?
For over 20 years, the government and stakeholders, both NGOs like ourselves and academics and the waste industry, worked with the company, Orica, to try to get a solution here in Australia. Through a large proportion of that time, we had a facility here in Australia, a Rolls-Royce technology that really the UN and everybody thought was a great technology. We had one established here. Unfortunately, that facility is now closed, but that doesn't mean you can't buy that technology again. That is still on the commercial market. But unfortunately, in 1996, and it gives you an idea of how long this all goes back to, we had a change of government in Australia. That change of government brought a new sort of view of waste, and their idea was it's nothing to do with government. It really is a commercial decision, so we'll just back out and let the company deal with it themselves. Well, from that day, I would say every opportunity to destroy this waste in Australia and to get public support for that has been squandered by the company, and eventually I think the decision was that it was easier to ship it overseas than it was to try to build and site a facility here in Australia.
With the most recent change in federal government, has there been a move back towards government regulation of waste?
Unfortunately not, no. The previous Environment Minister, Minister Garrett, we met with him when he first came in, as we had been working on this HCB issue for such a long time, hoping that he would, you know, take some advice. Unfortunately, he didn't, and 2 days before the election, in caretaker mode, he signed the permit for this waste to go overseas. That was very disappointing. On the bigger picture, if you look at the sustainability of waste management in Australia, the federal government, other than going through the process of writing a waste policy, has basically done nothing. So this government is very disappointing when it comes to waste. The Labor government in the early 90s made some incredible sort of moves towards good management of toxic waste, but this now appears to have been forgotten, and that they seem to be persisting with this idea that, you know, industries will deal with their waste in the most sustainable way and really turning their back on the idea that government have a role in hazardous waste management, which is required not only by our own legislation, but it is required by a number of international UN conventions on waste and chemicals that we have also signed and ratified. It would be very good to see an Australian minister stand up to the mark and, you know, really take a proper, environmentally sound, responsible approach to managing this.
Never talk politics? That's what we do.
So what have we heard on the show today, Nick?
I learnt that some believe the government has backed down, whether out of ignorance or cowardice, and is doing less to support waste disposal than they were about a decade ago. People as a whole have become much more aware of their own environmental impact, but we can't rely on industries to place more importance on waste disposal than their profit margins without government regulation.
Yeah, well, I think we've also heard that there are many of us out there who are doing their bit to make a difference and help conserve the environment. It's important for us to remember that our Earth's resources won't be plentiful or even available for future generations if we all don't make an effort to conserve and appreciate things a little more. That's all from us on the program this week, but a reminder that if you have something to say on this week's issue, join the Never Talk Politics Facebook group available online. You can also listen to the podcast of this week's show online at nevertalkpolitics2mce.podbean.com.
Never Talk Politics comes to you via the Community Radio Network. Special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association for financial support. So what track will we leave our listeners out there with today, Steph?
Who Cares by Gnarls Barkley, a song about how lack of action can restrict change.
Remember, whoever you are and whichever way you lean, keep talking politics.